Welcome to the Serious TV Drama Podcast with Scott and Dan. I'm Scott, and with me as always, the Mr. Snuggles to my big bowl of balls, it's Dan. How are you doing this evening, Dan?
Well, it's a little sad that I didn't get to watch a new episode of X-Files tonight, but fortunately, still they're keeping us nice and pleased, so I'm doing fine. And you, I suppose you're having a long week, so I probably shouldn't grill you on it too much, but...
Yeah, it's getting back into the frame of mind of working, and it's kind of been a little exhausting when you haven't been working for the previous several weeks. And unlike you, I was not so unhappy not to have another X-Files episode, because I wasn't a big fan of that last episode. I don't want to get into an X-Files conversation here, because it deserves more than just a couple minutes. I'll just say... in a way, on one hand, it reminds me of the original series that I tended to like the standalone, more fun Monster of the Week episodes more than the mythology. Although I did like the mythology episodes a lot, especially the really great ones, I just don't think they pulled it off here very well. And if we could spend another podcast where I could just basically shred the first and last episode of this little mini season, because those were for me by far the worst episodes of this season. I really found it kind of laughably bad in many respects. So I know you liked it. I know you were more tolerant of it than I was. I didn't believe it for any point during the entire episode, and it just seemed badly staged, wildly implausible. And this is a science fiction show, and I'm still saying wildly implausible. And I don't know, it felt like a script had ideas but that weren't actually written with any real thought behind them. I really didn't like it.
So yeah,
I love the middle episodes of this.
Yeah. I think they need a little bit more time. You know, I mean, if they would have had, like, you know, another episode maybe midway through the season to try to connect the two instead of having to jam everything in there, maybe have, I mean, I was fine with the episodes, but they could have used a little bit more time just to, you know, flesh stuff out a little bit. But you know, they have I'm assuming they'll come back, so they have time to work out these kinks, so. And maybe they'll can do a test season.
I guess maybe Chris Carter can do a George Lucas and just step away from it and let someone else write the damn thing. I don't know. I keep thinking about how much I didn't like it, man. Okay. All right. Focus. We're here to talk about a very different TV show, one that we can agree on. We're here to talk about Better Call Saul. Before we get to the latest episode, I wanted to acknowledge something from the previous week. Now, as folks listening probably know at this point, we tend to record these things shortly after we've both finished watching the episode one time through. You know, sometimes it might be 20 minutes later, it might be a half an hour later. Sometimes we get ready really soon after, but Skype delays us for God knows how long, or knocks us to the next day. But essentially, we're kind of flying without much of a net. Not even that much time to really consider things or take really in-depth notes, because we're trying to get the sucker out and to you guys, you know, in less than 24 hours of the episode, hopefully within a few hours of the episode. And I don't think to compare. I wouldn't want to compare us to when you read like the latest review by, say, an Alan Sepinwall or someone else, which is released minutes after. Because, hey, you know what? All the writers and the critics and the reviewers, they had already gotten a tape of the episode, you know, hours, if even days earlier. So they had time to write their pieces, you know, well ahead of time. They didn't type that out in 5 minutes, trust me. I'm saying all that for a reason. Not just as, oh, poor us. It's more because we're going to miss stuff. You know, it's going to happen because we're trying to, you know, absorb as much as we can and talk about it in a fairly coherent way. You know, just like it's kind of like I didn't realize that one of the two cops in the first episode was actually from Breaking Bad. I didn't recognize him. You know, I was like, oh, wow, that's great. So there might be details that we'll miss from time to time. What I would say that to folks who listen to us, especially those of you who are on our Facebook page, it's great if you actually contact us. You can post it on the page, or you can even, if you choose to, private message me or Dan or whoever, and you know, or email us if you happen to have our private emails. I'm not going to give it out here. To let us know about something you spotted or came across. This has happened before with when we covered Fargo. It might have even happened with Better Call Saul. I know it happened with Fargo a few times. You know, we have a couple friends who are also listeners who will sometimes catch things. So I have one, my friend Mike, who actually lives right around the corner from me. He is a fan of Better Call Saul, and he texted me or emailed me while he was listening to our latest podcast. To ask if we had noticed something, and we kind of missed it from last week. So I just wanted to mention it because it may play a part in a future episode because I went back and watched what he was talking about, and I'm a little surprised I didn't make a note of it. If you recall, in the opening of the previous episode, that's the one where Chuck is playing that piano piece, right? There's a point where he is looking at and the camera lingers on the top of the page. And there is a woman's name on the top of the page of the musical notes. The name is Rebecca and her last name is, I'm pronouncing it like Boise. It's B-O-I-S or Boys. I'm not sure. But there's a look on his face. It lingers there for a moment. That might play a part at some point. It's a detail that's very deliberate. I don't know how I missed it the first time, because I certainly would have at least mentioned it. But I wanted to thank Mike for pointing that out, because if that name should show up somewhere down the road, we'll know where it came from. So I just wanted to mention that before we got to tonight's episode.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I guess we'll see. It could just be like, you know, somebody like one of the producers or something just having their name on there like they do on these shows sometimes. But you never know. It could be something more.
I guess because the way the camera lingered on the shot and his expression made it seem like it might be more than just let's get the name of like a producer or a writer, you know, like on say, like the X-Files did when they did a tribute to a few people connected to the X-Files who had passed away. So they had their names on some gravestones in that one scene, for example, which is actually kind of cool that they did that. Okay. So with that said, I think it's time to get to tonight's episode. Once again, we're here to talk about Better Call Saul. Now, tonight's episode was titled Amarillo, you know, as in Amarillo, Texas. Now, it's interesting that we get a title that has the O ending, which is harks back to season one of how all the titles in season one ended in the letter O. And it's an interesting episode because throughout this entire episode, there are callbacks to season one. Callbacks to episode titles, callbacks to different moments and things from last season, as well as a few Breaking Bad things as well. But I thought it was interesting. I was more aware of all the self-show references in this episode.
Oh, yeah, there was a lot. Yeah, a lot of Better Call Saul throwbacks this week. So I definitely noticed it. I mean, it was almost like bordering on a little bit too much, but it didn't quite cross that line. but it definitely was like, you know, they're really hitting it hard.
Right. Right. Absolutely. It's interesting, however, that that was the case. And I'll tell you why it's interesting, because I made note of, you know, who the writer and directors were of this episode. Director, it's not really that interesting. It's some guy named Scott Winant, who is, but he's interesting because his resume is he's directed a few episodes of every TV show ever. I mean, he's directed, you know, episodes of True Blood and Agent Carter and like Fargo, a couple episodes. He's just all over the map. But what's more interesting for this episode, and the fact that there's all these references to season one of Better Call Saul, the writer is Jonathan Glotzer. And usually when you look at a writer for this show, they tend to have written at least one previous episode, or at least they've written maybe a couple episodes of Breaking Bad, or they have that kind of connection. Not this fellow. The major writing credit to his writer resume, so to speak, he was an executive story editor and writer for the entire season of the Netflix show Bloodline last year. So I kind of like the fact that in addition to a lot of the Breaking Bad regulars, they also kind of infuse the show with some new blood and new blood and, you know, new talent, just to kind of just to keep it fresh, so to speak. So, and I was pretty much a fan of Bloodline. It had its flaws, but overall it was a pretty solid show, and definitely in near the tier of shows like Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad, if not quite there. So I thought it was interesting that that's who the writer was. Okay, so let's get into the episode a little bit here. I really got a kick out of the opening scene. It was funny to see Jimmy, because initially I thought, wait, is he dressed like Boss Hogg here? And then I realized he's really just got his Matlock outfit, but, you know, with a bola tie and a hat. But it had a little bit of a Dukes of Hazzard kind of feel to it for a second. What I enjoyed about this little scene, and talk about callbacks to season one, something we saw a few times, several times even in season one, was how well Jimmy gets along with the old folks. You know, he once he gets into a room with them, he starts laying on the Jimmy McGill charm. And in this opening scene, it's not a room, it's on a bus. He's obviously made a deal with this bus driver to kind of pretend like the bus needs a little bit of a transmission help or something while he goes in and does something, you know, we later learn he kind of sort of shouldn't be doing. But again, I think the fun for viewers like us and others is it gives Bob Odenkirk a chance to go on in one of his little riffs. When he tells stories, it's some of the most fun stuff on the show. It's kind of like when I watched the show The Blacklist, and I know it's a weird comparison. But the thing I like the most about The Blacklist is when every episode they give James Spader at least one or two scenes where he's just telling a story, which may not really have much to do with anything, but it's still fun to hear. Odenkirk's the same way, where although his stories do tend to have more of a grounded reason on the show, I think, I really got a kick out of how he seems to spin the narrative of that analogy when he's trying to convince the the old woman, what was her name, Alma May or Urbano to sign on the dotted line, so to speak. I'm assuming, and this is kind of a fun start to the episode, so I'm assuming you enjoyed it as well.
Yeah, I really like that. I mean, just the way they shot it and everything, the way they, you know, show that nice big sky. So the fact that I'm going to be down there soon definitely was a nice little sample of what I'm going to experience soon, just because it just, it's just such a different area, you know, to be down in, and just when they always shoot it so beautifully.
Right, and what's also interesting about the way that scene is constructed, to pick up on something you said, is, you know, they're in Texas, right? Because we see, you know, we know the title of the episode is Amarillo. We see,
right,
as we pan past that big painted wall, it's the, you know, Texas. It's the land of the big sky. So you've got the open vista, something this show, and more so even Breaking Bad, is always known for. And then right after that, we get him in this really tight, cramped space. He's in this bus with these people. And unlike a room, which could be faked, you know, which could be a breakaway thing where you can move walls, this felt like it was an actual bus. Although, I mean, it's possible they might have cut some holes in it somewhere or cut part of the roof out. Or I don't know how exactly they do a shot like that. I'm just going to say it's very complicated. So it's kind of fun to watch it. And all those people just crammed in there. So, you know, the extras were really getting their money's worth in this episode, even more so than they did in the old age home scenes from last season. But, you know, again, the point of the scene is he's trying to get clients for the Sandpiper case. And again, I love his little bit of charm there. And he makes it, he doesn't want to scare them too much. You know, he doesn't want to make Sandpiper sound like they're the biggest villain. You know, because he keeps throwing the phrase, you know, even if it was an accident. I kind of enjoyed that. We switch from that to that conference room scene. So this is something I think we've been expecting to happen from this point on, is as long as Chuck's going to be there, you're going to get this tension. You're going to get these scenes between them, because it's interesting that, you know, you wonder, because I think this is just going to be the first of many things, although maybe not considering what happens by the end of the episode, but I wonder with Chuck how much of what he does here is out of genuine concern about the case, and how much is it really just trying to essentially prove that Jimmy, well, to put it bluntly, that Jimmy is a fraud, that Jimmy is not the lawyer he presents himself to be here. It's weird that Chuck still seems to have, I don't want to call it a vendetta, but it's like you'd think Jimmy would be the one with an axe to grind, but it seems like it's still Chuck here. Did that seem that way to you as well?
Yeah, I definitely took it the latter way you described it, where Chuck's definitely, you know, still kind of out to keep Jimmy down. But it's just kind of like, I don't know, reminds me of, something where just like, well, it's kind of like my, you know, one of my favorite comedies, What About Bob, where like everybody thinks that like Bob's like the nicest guy ever, and like only Richard Dreyfuss's character like can just see he's like a complete psychopath. So like I kind of think it's like that with Chuck, where he's just like, right, come on, why is everybody like completely taken in by this crap, and it's just frustrating. So that's the way I kind of take it.
Only with a much more insidious way of going about things, because at least to a certain extent, we can sympathize with the doctor from What About Bob, so we understand his frustration. Whereas in this, what makes it unique or different is that, well, no, we like Jimmy. We don't like Chuck very much. So, but yeah, I definitely see what you're saying there. So basically, and the point of what they're talking about in this meeting is it's all about Jimmy's client's outreach and how he's getting these clients. Apparently, he's gotten, I think, 200 signed up over the last 3 weeks, and they're just wondering how he's doing that. Well, Chuck is the one who's wondering about it, because as it turns out, again, for those who are not legally minded, you might not know this, in this, especially in this situation, you cannot openly solicit clients. That's a no-no. So you got to find your way around that. And as we saw what he did, he kind of sort of did solicit clients. So we're having this situation with Jimmy where he's, to put it mildly, he's bending the rules. And the fact is he's doing something much like the end of the previous episode, which would actually get him disbarred. So maybe he's doing more than just bending the rules. Kim is continuing to have an issue with this. So this is going to be an ongoing thing with them yet again, because right after that, you know, she says point blank, you know, solicitation will get him disbarred. And she makes it clear that this, it's not just about him. I mean, obviously she's worried about him and what could happen to him, but you know what? She put herself out on a limb for the guy. So anything he does, any misdeeds he does, that's going to blow back on her. Because it's about, you know, her word, her judgment, I think she says in it. So she just wants to, she believes in him, but she wants him to be able to do it right. And so what's interesting about that is you start wondering at a certain point if he can. Because he's already proven himself to be someone who believes whenever he tries to do the right thing, it doesn't quite work out for him. So you kind of wonder if It's almost become a mental block for him. Maybe he can't do the quote unquote right thing all the time.
Yeah, it definitely was an interesting. I mean, the way the episode started was so much, you know, so much fun, and then with the Kim scene, it just kind of brought us right back to reality. Just like, okay, so, you know, there are consequences to this stuff. So, you know, it's always nice the way the show does that, where you just kind of get, you know, completely involved in whatever type con thing is going on, and then all of a sudden, just like, you know, whoa, okay, you got to think about this from another angle. So,
right, it's a show that can be fun in games, and then you realize it's not a game, and sometimes it's not fun either, you know, so you need to get serious sometimes. So we bounce from Jimmy to Mike, and I love that we got Mike with his granddaughter, Kaylee, and he got her a little toy, and this is pretty much a reference to Breaking Bad, because he got her that little pink pig toy, which she decides to name Mr. Snuggles. And I think it was like the rollover pig from Breaking Bad. I think we saw it in season 5. I don't remember what the name of that pig was. I think it was Bacon. I think they named the pig Bacon in that season. But definitely it's a little call out to Breaking Bad there. So, again, Mike is obviously at his daughter-in-law's house. So I think it's the first time we've seen her since maybe the Great Mike episode from last season. I don't recall if she showed up in a later episode that season or not.
Yeah, I think she was in one episode. So,
but basically, she's telling him. But the point of this is she seemed a little jittery because the last couple of nights she believes she's heard gunshots. And even when she called the police, they didn't do dick, essentially. So right at this moment, I'm thinking, is vengeful Mike going to be showing up in this episode or something? So I was already kind of like, ooh, this could be good or it could be scary. We'll see what happens. Later, you know, we're back with Jimmy, and, you know, we find out that the issue is that the residents at places like say Colorado Springs, they're not responding to any of the mailers that are being sent out. Jimmy even suspects maybe they're not even getting them, that the staff might be instructed by the Sandpiper people to toss out their direct mailers. So he stops Cliff Main, our guy at Begley Jr. on the way out, and he's got an idea. And his idea is he knows that these people have very regimented schedules. You know, every hour of their day is accounted for, and they stick to it like clockwork, you know, hence it being a schedule. And between 3 and 4, all these people were all going to be watching Murder, She Wrote. So his idea is to buy a local TV ad and have it air after the first act. He's done his homework. I love that he says at 3:14, you know, the first act break, you will have a captive audience, so to speak. They will see that ad, and then the calls should start pouring in. Surprisingly, at least in the moment, Cliff kind of likes the idea because he mentions that they had done a TV ad to help support a case years earlier. So it looks like, you know, Jimmy's going to get the green light to do this. Then we see the TV spot that they had done before. And it's pretty much as dry and as non-flashy an ad as you could possibly conceive of. It's simply just text on a screen with a voiceover and maybe this little swirly background, you know, behind the text, which his assistant, I think his name is Omar, seems to be especially fond of. He talks about they had meetings all about that background. Now, looking at the look on Jimmy's face, and as we know, if there's someone who'll later do quite a few rather outlandish TV ads, it's this man. So I was thinking, oh, he's going to do a TV ad. But I realized, he ain't anywhere close to being Saul Goodman yet. So it's got to be somewhat restrained. But I was dying to see what he would pull off here. It may not really be a genuine callback the way some of the other things, in fact, in the very next scene are. But putting on a videotape of a commercial for some reason, the first thing I thought of was one of the very first things we saw in the pilot for the show, when we see Saul Goodman in the present day, you know, sitting at home in black and white and watching his own TV ads. Because I think that's how that scene ended in the pilot, if I recall. Wasn't it? I think it's when he puts on the ad, it's in color. That's kind of when we come into go into the past, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Right.
By the way, and if there was any word that made me think of Saul Goodman at all in this scene, it's when he questions the showmanship of the ad. Like, where is the showmanship? And I kept thinking, that's a Saul Goodman-like word. So we end up at that house, and it's the house from an episode from season one. And in case anyone doesn't remember the title of that episode, it is the one episode that doesn't end in an O from last season. He actually says it when someone picks up one of the little figurines. He mentions it's the Alpine Shepherd Boy. So we're already – it's a reference to season one in the episode with that really nice lady that he I think he was trying to help her write her with her will, if I'm not mistaken. I think that was the whole point of that one.
Yeah.
Then he's got those – two students. Those are the same two guys who were filming him with the billboard. They had to be the same guys, right?
Yeah, it was the same guys from the episode Hero.
Look at you. You look that excellent. So right now we're like bang, bang. Yeah, there's two references to episodes from last season. And we get this nice little realization that Jimmy McGill is something of an auteur. You know, he starts, you know, kind of acting out what he imagines the ad is going to be, you know, shivering in a rocking chair with a shawl and whatever. But anyone who's even got a rudimentary working knowledge of classic cinema had to get a kick out of the little parody they pull off for just a moment when the woman who lives there, whose name escapes me, although I know it's said a few times in Alpine Shepherd Boy, and it's probably said in this episode, I did not write that fact down. But when the woman comes down, and she's in that, the little chairlift that goes down the staircase. So as she descends the staircase and she says, "I'm ready for my close-up, Mr. McGill." So it's a total Sunset Boulevard parody, so I got a really huge kick out of that. So we then bounce to see we're back with Mike. And speaking of references to the season one, we get to see Mike on surveillance again, which we saw in season one. And he's eating a sandwich. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that's a pimento sandwich because it looks like that's what it must be, which, you know, that's his sandwich of choice. And it's also that's a title from last season, right? It wasn't one of them called pimento. Another question for you. I think while he's on surveillance here, you know, because he's keeping an eye out on the neighborhood and his daughter-in-law's house specifically, for part of the scene, he's listening to a baseball game. It might be Vin Scully. I'm not sure. I wasn't listening too closely to it. Wasn't he listening to a baseball game last season when he was doing something like this? I seem to have a memory of that. That he had like a little earpiece and he was listening to a baseball
game. Yeah, when he was watching the Kettlemans, he was listening to baseball.
Was that when he was eating all the apples?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. So I like that they have this – Mike has these ritualized behaviors. Like when he goes on surveillance, he listens to baseball games and apparently eats. There's a moment when he hears that bang bang or thud thud kind of a sound, and I like when he looks in the rearview mirror. And I was thinking, oh my God, Mike Ehrmantraut has got dead eyes. You know, he's just I actually started writing the riff from Jaws. I started like he's got dead eyes, yeah, like a doll's eyes. I just remember thinking, you know, he may not be the biggest guy, but he's one of the most intimidating people I've seen on television over the last few years. He just can be quite scary sometimes. And the payoff to the scene is what we think initially might be gunshots. And t- turns out to be just the thud of newspapers hitting the ground on or people's lawns as someone slowly drives around the neighborhood delivering newspapers. I'm not so sure that the sound of newspapers hitting the floor would really be mistaken for gunshots, because his daughter-in-law earlier mentioned she initially thought there were firecrackers, but then she thought there were gunshots. And I was listening, like, they don't really sound like either one to me, and they're not in rapid succession here either. So I was wondering about that. Especially, you know, when he goes back to work, he's keeping hours the way I keep hours, i.e. no sleep. Huh. And he gets a call. He rushes to her house, and she's pointing, I think, to, I guess it's a tree. I don't know if it's a tree or a side of a house. I can't remember if it's stone or a tree. See what happens when you just watch it?
It's the side of the house, just where there's like a divot in the stucco there.
Right. And so she's insisting that that's from gunshots, and she talks about how she heard it at 2:13 in the morning, whatever. Now, we know full well he was out there at 2:13 and throughout the entire night, so this didn't happen. So you start wondering, is she losing it? Because he was there, you know, even briefly says maybe she dreamed it, but then he, you know, quickly just agrees with her. For a moment, I thought, could she be running a scam just so they can move? But then I realized she wouldn't have to do that. She could just say she wants to move and he would gladly accommodate. So I'm starting to wonder if she's just, if there's something wrong with her, if she, for her to believe that something like this is going on.
Yeah, I'm not
and
sure.
And if that's going to play a part.
Yeah.
You're not sure? No. Yeah. It would be weird if you were sure, because, you know, how could we be sure?
Yeah.
I really do like that actress, though, I have to say. I keep forgetting what I know her from one other thing. I just like her. I just can't think of what it is off the top of my head. So, oh, well. So, then we're at Jimmy's corporate apartment, and he's with Kim, and that's where they're examining the different pieces of decor that are customary in every corporate apartment like this, including the big bowl of balls or all the empty vases and whatever. But the reason she's there, other than, you know, to hang out with Jimmy, is that he wants to show her the TV spot that they had filmed. Now, I like that when he's setting the scene for her, trying to imagine what it would be like in the retirement home as the people are getting ready, watching TV. And he mentions that they have, you know, they're getting ready, they're eating their lime jello, which actually is another reference to last season. In fact, those folks who either listen to our podcast or better still listen to the Insider podcast know that they actually wanted to title one of their episodes Jell-O, and they ran into some issues because of, you know, brand trademark, so they couldn't do it. But Jell-O is prominently mentioned in one of those episodes, so I thought, oh, that's another reference to last season. And then we see the commercial. I'll admit, the commercial was, as Kim puts it, it was a more professional-looking piece than I would have expected those people to be able to pull off. I was very impressed with the little spot they put together.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome.
Now, when you were watching that, and then we were waiting for her reaction, did you think she would like it right off the bat, or did you think she'd have any issues with it?
Yeah, I figured she'd like it. I mean, just it was pretty well done, you know. So when I wasn't laughing at how, like, you know, hammy it was, I figured she'd be into it.
Right. Yeah, I guess I initially thought she would have an issue, but then once she liked it, I realized, oh no, she's not going to be the problem. The problem's going to be at the law firm, and that's when we realized he hasn't told Cliff Main about it yet, which I expected. I didn't think he would have told him at this point. But we then start to realize he might not want to tell him. He's even afraid to tell him at this point. You know, so, you know, the next day you see Jimmy at work, and, you know, and you see the tape is very prominently in the foreground of the screen, you know, on the desk. And when Jimmy hears that the strumming guitar, you know, across the office, he does initially get up to go there, but then he turns back and calls the TV station. And again, it's like that moment where you're like, oh. Now, I was trying to figure out how best to define what just happened there. I didn't know if this was a matter of self-confidence, that his confidence has been shaken, you know, from the Chuck stuff and whatever, or this is a determination to do something which isn't going by the book. You know, I wasn't really, I mean, I guess it could be interpreted a number of ways. I mean, how did you read Jimmy's decision not to tell the boss, not to run it by them, instead just go ahead and do it himself?
Yeah, it just kind of seemed like, you know, like the inner struggle where he's just not really sure what, you know, what direction to go. So he's, you know, doing one thing, doing the other, and then just, you know, at the end, it came his way. It didn't win out.
Right. So we do bounce back to Mike, and he's at the vet. Again, this is the vet that we saw last season. The veterinarian who also has shady connections and can, he's like the underground Craigslist for criminal jobs, I guess. Because Mike wants to put together some money to help get his daughter-in-law a new place, but he doesn't seem like he's willing to do jobs that are really, you know, getting his hands really dirty. There's a phrase they use in the episode, which I'm totally, taking it to the next level. Yeah, because, you know, he doesn't really want to, you know, work for a loan shark. You know, he doesn't want to be breaking people's legs and stuff like that. But so there really isn't, at this point, there really isn't anything for him. So you know that Mike must be desperate because he agrees to like a $200 job. And I know the real estate and stuff out in this part of the country is not as expensive as where I live, but I still don't think $200 is going to get you very far. So to me, I thought just underscored that Mike is trying to do whatever he can to get at least some money together. When we bounce back to Davis in Maine, then we get to see Jimmy in anxious mode because he's went ahead. The commercial is going to run. He clearly hasn't told Cliff or anyone else in authority about it. Somehow all this is happening in the office and all these people are all waiting to get all these phone calls because the hotline's going to go to all their different phones. But Cliff and any other partners are unaware of this, which, you know, it's a different part of the office. I believe that it's, you know, it's not too much of a strain of credibility here. But, you know, now we're kind of rooting for this to work out for him. And initially, he's waiting for that phone to ring because he knows that the spot is aired and the phone's not ringing. Now, there's a moment in season one where Jimmy is trying to make the phone ring as well. So that's a little bit of a callback to season one. And I remember when we talked about it last year, I commented that reminded me of actually a famous one of the many famous sketches from Mr. Show that Bob Odenkirk was from, where he was a character who wasn't actually a lawyer, but he was doing a TV spot as though he was a lawyer. But he kept waiting for the phone to ring and he kept like gesturing towards it, waiting for it to ring. So I thought he was kind of calling back his own comedic past here. And speaking of all the references to last season, when the phones start to ring and we see the different lines lighting up, he says, "Bingo." Which is the title of another episode from the first season.
Yeah. And it definitely was, you know, it definitely was quite the callback to last year, just because, I mean, it was the same thing where, you know, he did something kind of like a, you know, a stunt type thing and then got good results from it, so.
Right, he was waiting to get calls was that based on the billboard thing, I guess?
Yep.
Had to be. Well, how else would his number have gotten out there? It had to be from that. In between Jimmy moments, we do briefly see that Mike gets a call for a quote unquote next level job, and you know, so he arranges to meet someone later on that episode. I was in that moment, I was already pretty sure who he was going to be meeting. I felt, oh, it's did you also pretty much call it as far as who Mike would be seeing by the end of that episode.
Yeah, I didn't figure that they were going to jump the gun and, like, you know, move the story too far forward here, so there wasn't a lot of options.
Yeah, you know, it's way, 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 way too soon for him to be getting involved with people like, you know, like a Gus Fring or even anyone on that level. I think you got to build that. You don't just jump right to that. So it's I think you're just way too far away from stuff like that.
Yeah.
No, where we go back to did you want to say something? I'm sorry.
Nope. Okay. I was just too bad.
So we're back things get awkward. So we're back with Kim and Jimmy, or you know, can we combine the names? Kimmy? No, that just sounds like Kimmy. Can't do it. So they're hanging out. They're watching a movie, the Rock Hudson movie. And speaking of Breaking Bad references, the movie they're watching, the Rock Hudson movie, it's Ice Station Zebra. Now that should have rung the bell of any really diehard, hardcore Breaking Bad fans. Because if you go back to the very first appearance of Saul Goodman in season 2, the Better Call Saul episode, what does he tell his new prospective client, Badger? It is Badger, right? Not Badger?
Yeah.
Badger, yep. Beaver? Oh, his name is Badger, but Walt always called him Beaver. Sorry. The checks for Saul Goodman, they're not made out to Saul Goodman. He says to make it out to Ice Station Zebra. So by seeing this movie here and knowing that years later, that's what he uses as the term for receiving money from clients, makes me think that this movie has some sort of significance for him. This moment he shares with Kim, maybe in other moments as well. But again, I thought it was kind of funny too. It was a callback I didn't expect to happen.
Yeah. Plus, then they did a callback to the front to Saul itself, and you know, with the thing from last year.
Right. And you know, and of course, during this kind of whenever there's something nice with, you know, between him and Kim now, it seems something has to happen just to kind of just put a little bit of acid in the mix, just as, or as you would say in one of our previous podcasts, just makes it a little bit bitter somehow. And in this case, she's not even aware of it, but it's more for us because he gets that call from Cliff. And that's when you find out that we find out that Cliff has found out that he ran that TV ad and he's not happy about it. And this is the first time we've seen Cliff angry at him. And he starts believing that, you know, maybe some of the stuff he had heard about him was true. What is it? He says something. Howard had said he was quirky. He didn't realize he was an arsonist or something like that.
Yeah.
So, and the problem is that Jimmy tries to talk his way out of it. You know, he tries to kind of do his little song and dance and rationalize what he did. The problem is that can work on some people. I mean, it certainly can work with the senior citizens in that bus. It can work with, you know, the common guy on the street or what have you. I don't think it's going to work with someone like a seasoned attorney like Clifford Maine, which is evident from this scene. It clearly doesn't really have any effect. He's still going to have to come the following morning and show that TV ad, and then we'll see what happens. But that was kind of I wouldn't say it was an unexpected moment, but it was making me look forward to what their reaction is going to be to that ad. But of course, we don't go to the next morning. We actually switch to later that evening, I guess, when Mike shows up, you know, for that next level gig. And, you know, as I pretty much assumed, and I think most people assumed, it's Nacho. There was a brief moment I was wondering, is Nacho setting him up? But we don't really get to find out much about it because all we find out is Nacho needs his help because there's a guy that he needs to go away. And all of a sudden the episode was over.
Huh.
This is one of the few times I've watched the show where I was like, wait, there isn't another act?
Huh.
I'm prepared to write another page or two worth of notes. Did you just cliffhanger us, man? You know, what the hell? I mean, I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but it seemed to kind of all of a sudden end abruptly. Like, wait, what? I really liked the episode, but I didn't have that feeling of completion, so to speak, at the end of the episode like I've had with the first two this season. So it's not really a criticism, but it was kind of like, wait, what? Or maybe it's like, wow, that was over way faster than I thought. So do you have any thoughts on this or where you think they're going or whatever the heck you want to say about the episode in general?
Yeah, not really. I mean, I'm not really sure what's going on now, so it'll be interesting to see what they do next.
Well, it'll be interesting first to see the Jimmy storyline, because it's the next episode will be the fourth episode. It's another 10-episode season, right? So I wouldn't think that he would derail his career at Davis and Maine. I keep wanting to say Maine for some reason with that law firm. I wouldn't think he would derail his career with them that fast. So no. I'm assuming he's going to be able to make the case with that TD ad somehow. Because it's not that over the top. I mean, I'm wondering if we're going to meet who the other partners are, or at least one of the other partners. I'm wondering if there may be some who find it to be a bit over the top or unseemly, and someone who will be convincing. I'm also wondering if it's only going to be Davis and Maine people there, as opposed to maybe people from Hamlin. Hamlin and McGill? I always mess up the name.
Yeah.
Because I'll tell you one thing, if Chuck is in that room, he ain't liking that ad.
Yeah.
But I don't know if he would have anything to do with it, because this is really their law firm, so I don't think they have a thing here. So, you know, I just don't see that them derailing that storyline so early. But, you know, who knows what Gilligan, Gould, and company have in store for us. Also, it'll be interesting. It's something that Kim approved of, but will she have yet another issue with him because he didn't run it by the powers that be first? That he still found a way to cut a corner instead of maybe believing in himself and showing it to them first, because her whole issue about that she believes in him earlier, maybe. Yeah. So I'm probably more curious about that than the Mike storyline. Not that I'm not interested in the Mike storyline. Of course I am, because I love Jonathan Banks and so on. The only thing I'm wondering about with the Mike storyline is, like, Nacho needs someone else to kill somebody for him. He can't. I'm curious why he can't do it himself. And I'm sure there's going to be some reason he can't, because of who the person is, and maybe he's too close to him. Maybe it's Tuco. Who knows? But I'm kind of curious about that storyline. But we'll see. It's not as focused as I was expecting it to be at this point. But I'm okay with that. It seems the show, much like last season, may exist of mini arcs as opposed to one overriding arc so far. So I guess we'll see what happens. My notes are depleted. I don't really have anything else that comes to mind. I mean, like I said, I really adored the episode. Looking forward to next week, as always. I believe next week you will be away. Is that correct? You are on. Is it next week when you're going on the Southwestern excursion?
Yep. Yeah, a week from now I'll be in New Mexico. So.
Excellent. So as you said, you will try to see if you can get some further insight into the locations and where they shoot the show, and maybe you can kind of be like a little junior correspondent, or at least talk about how cool it was to see certain parts of that country, which I know that you especially adore, right?
Yeah, I've got the loaded up the Google Map documents that show where all the different locations from both series are. So when I hit Albuquerque, I think I'll be there maybe a week from Tuesday. I'm planning on hitting a bunch of them, so it should be pretty interesting. And I'm looking forward to all that. Yeah.
Well, And I think tentatively, we'll see what happens. I think right now I have it planned that we once or twice in March I may have a guest host sit in for you, kind of like the classic Carson days, where you know Carson might take off occasionally and David Brenner, or I guess Jay Leno eventually sat in for him. So we may have a fellow podcaster sit in for you if we go about it that way. Although it will be a decidedly no-frills podcast if we do that, because I lack the expertise or intelligence to do the music additions that you're expert at. So although I might do something really rinky-dinky for the opening at least, I have to see how bad it would sound if I did that. So I'll probably need to do a couple of tests before I do anything. But that should be – it should be an interesting experiment, if nothing else. So I'm kind of curious to see how that's going to go. Yeah. And that's pretty much it. I mean, we are going to get together with our fellow Geekier podcasters later this week to talk about – a couple other shows, namely Legends of Tomorrow, and I'm going to probably go on a spiel about the show Agent Carter. And, you know, that's pretty much it. The rest of March is shaping up to be, you know, Better Call Saul and the Geeky shows, and maybe a surprise or two. Probably not. Yeah. I don't know why I just said that. But When I start losing track of what I'm saying and I'm starting to ramble, that means it's definitely time to start wrapping this sucker up. So maybe I should get into that right now. Too, so. What? Say that one more time. I didn't hear that.
Oh, I think it's also a sign that you should like just go to bed when we're done with this instead of staying up all fucking night.
Yeah, I know. You're like everyone else, But Dan, I still haven't finished the second episode of Vinyl. I have to stay up. Anyway. God. The show, I like some of it. But anyway, that's a topic for a podcast we'll never record. Anyway, so if you enjoyed this podcast, maybe minus the last couple minutes, you'll probably enjoy our Facebook page as well. You can find us on Facebook. We're the Serious TV Drama Podcast. Just type that in Facebook and you'll find us that way. I'm not going to read the whole / crap. No one types all that shit in. You can also find us the same way on iTunes. Search for the Serious TV Drama Podcast. We will be what will pop up. Subscribe to our feed and better still rate and review us there. Every rating and review certainly helps us rank higher when people are doing searches. I was very pleased to see that we have been shooting up there on the Better Call Saul page. I think last time I checked, we were, if you just search for Better Call Saul podcast, I know we were in the 30s. I think there might have been another way where it might have ranked higher. I don't remember. So my dream is to finish in the top 16. That's yeah. I don't know why. It's a rather sad dream.
It's sad for the other podcast.
The thing I don't get, by the way.
Yeah.
It's frustrating when, well, you know what? I should not go off on a tangent where I'm ripping on other people, so let me stop myself right now. what frustrates me, however, is that we seem to do – sometimes I search for us under different TV show headings or podcasts, and we seem to do better when searching for an Arrow podcast than for The Flash. And I'm like, but we talk more about The Flash. I don't understand. But whatever. Anyway. You can also follow us on Twitter. Our handle there is at STVD Podcast. Again, that's STVD as in Serious TV Drama Podcast. I send out the podcast that way, and we do tweet various things from time to time. I did a bunch of Oscar tweets last night, for example, and sometimes if anything else strikes my fancy. I keep wanting to reach out to cast members from Better Call Saul to see if maybe I can hook somebody for like a 5-minute phone interview, though I think it'll never happen. But you know, that might be my only way of attempting that. I have an idea, but it probably won't work. We'll see. All right. Well, that's all I got. Unless there's something else you wanted to say, I'm ready to call it a night. So
nope, call it a night.
Are you done for the evening now, Dan?
Oh, I am so done. All right, then.
All right, well, good night, Dan.
Good night, Scott.
we dance together. My world's in disguise. It's a fairyland tale that's come true. And when you look at me with those stars in your eyes, I could waltz across Texas with you. Waltz across Texas with you in my arms. Waltz across Texas with you. Like a storybook ending, I'm lost in your charms. And I could waltz across Texas with you. Oh, buddy, now. And Leon, my heartaches and troubles are just up and gone the moment that you come in view. And with your hand in mine, dear, I could dance on and on. And I could waltz across Texas with you. Waltz across Texas with you in my arms. Waltz across Texas with you. Like a storybook ending, I'm lost in your charms. And I could waltz across Texas with you.